everybody out there. We are doing something a little bit special tonight. The G2, it's a big phone. It's a really nice phone. A lot of people have a lot of questions about it. And it just so happens that Andrew, which is here with me tonight.
Hello.
And I both have one. So we wanted to take an opportunity, use the free tools that Google gives us, and answer a few questions. And I'll be honest, Andrew, I don't know about you, but I'd rather talk and answer the questions than just type all the time.
It can make it a little easier to get your point across when you're it's sometimes a lot of things are hard to express, you know, exactly how something works or how it feels is, you know, I mean, I think we do a pretty good job when we sit down and give it a week and a half or 2 weeks to write a review, but you know, right off the top of our heads, it doesn't always work out that way.
Agreed. We're on the same page there. I mean, I don't know. I like to talk. I like to listen. I don't like to write near as much as I like to do either one of those. So
right.
But so we'll go ahead and start. You had the Verizon G2, and your review, I mean, it sounds like it was a pretty slick device. Give us the 2-minute version.
Yeah, I mean, I think I came away extremely impressed overall. You know, I wasn't really too hot on the idea of LG's recent software tweaks and everything coming into it, but I think I came away most impressed by the as a complete package, as a total device. It feels good. I mean, for the size, it feels good. The software, it's not the best, but it's far, far, far from the worst. And once you get everything set up the way you like it, it's a pretty good experience. And you get to look at it through an amazing screen, and you get to take some really, really great pictures with it. So it has a lot going for it. That and on Verizon, you're getting wireless charging, which is also nice. It kind of makes it a complete package. But I think that there are a couple of shortcomings. Of course, I had more issues with the buttons than you did. You can tell us about your experience on that. But those things aside, it sounds like not a lot of people have such a distaste for the buttons. And this is a major front runner on Verizon or any carrier as far as my experience is concerned.
I have to mirror most of what you said. The first minute I turned it on, I'm like, oh my God, it's like LG and Samsung had a baby and it puked all over this phone. But when you dig into it, it's not as bad as its first impression leaves you. It's as far away from what we call pure or stock Android as you can get. But the additions, I liked some of them. I didn't care for some of them, but I was very impressed that they all work. To me, that was a huge plus. You don't have to shut stuff off to make your phone, you know, nobody wants it to sit there and just churn and you want to smash it. You want everything to work the way it's supposed to work. So that impressed me. Yes, the buttons, I could probably get used to those buttons if I had to. I don't think I'm going to run out and buy a G2. It's just a little bit too big for me. And I'm a big guy, but I like to carry my phone in my shirt pocket. And I'm still going to hang on to things that are a little smaller. Maybe one day nobody will make a small one and I'll have to get a bigger phone. Having said that, because the buttons are on the back, the bezels are awful thin on this thing. Impressive.
It's extremely impressive. And the bezels on the top and bottom of the screen aren't exactly huge either.
No.
And when you put the on-screen buttons in with that equation, you really get like a all-screen kind of feeling. Yep. And, and it's symmetrical top to bottom, left to right. So it's just, it's kind of like a giant screen in your hand. And like the purport, you know, I think they talked about it's the highest screen proportion, you know, percentage of any other device. But if they could have scaled that whole thing down to maybe a 5-inch screen instead of pushing it out that extra 5.2, I would have been much happier with it. It's like the exact opposite of what the One did, which is 4.7-inch screen and kind of a larger chassis because the boom sound speakers and all that stuff. So I really would have loved if they could have just gone with the other approach. I'm not sure if their 1080p screen technology just necessitated having a slightly larger screen or what it is, but I think if we could have scaled it down a little bit, of course, I've got large hands too, and I think I talked about it in the review that you still are straining your hand a little bit to reach all the way around the sides of it.
Which was, I don't like the on-screen buttons, but it was pretty smart of them to include one that will open the notification shade.
Right.
Just because of that. You know, I've got big hands. I don't have long fingers, though, so I don't have much more reach than an average guy. And yeah, it's you struggle to reach the notifications unless you adjust your hand. So if you put that button there, it works. But back to the buttons on the back. The Verizon version has different buttons.
Right.
I really like the way they look on. Well, you got it there handy?
Yeah, let's see if I can actually get it to show up on the screen.
Oh yeah, that's and let me put the AT&T one up there.
There we go, autofocus. And I will agree with you, they do actually, they look a lot nicer. They kind of, they're clearly not metal, but they kind of have a metal feel to them. It's kind of like a brushed stainless kind of look. But as you saw there with the comparison, the Verizon one, the buttons are about half the width of what you have on the AT&T and the International, and I think every other model is going to have those extremely wide buttons on it.
Yeah, that's what I've seen, I'm pretty sure.
So I will agree with you that I think they look nicer. They match the pod around the camera better, and just overall it just looks nice.
Mm-hmm.
But I think after reading your review, talking with Phil has put up some of his own thoughts on it. I think that the buttons really made up a bulk of my reasoning behind not liking it, the button placement, because the way that they are, they sit really flush.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't stick out, and they're really small, and the power button especially is tiny. So you're kind of hunting and pecking for it, and with a back button, you really just want it to, you need to know exactly where those buttons are to have the confidence to, you know, pick up your phone, hit the button, and turn it on.
Yep. And one thing nice about the AT&T version, the back buttons, your center button is made out of a different material than the up and down. And even my fingers have been stuck on me for a long time, and I haven't been very nice to them. The tips are hard, and I play guitar a little bit, so I've got hard, horrible fingers, and they're not phone-friendly, but even I can feel the difference in material if I rub my finger across it, and that helps. That lets me know exactly where the power button is.
Mm-hmm.
So I could imagine if they were all the same that I may not be as happy.
Yeah, and I just didn't ever get that kind of feedback. You know, a lot of times, you know, I thought I got to the point where I was confident, oh, okay, that's where the power button is, and then I hit it and nothing happens. I hit it again, nothing happens, because I'm hitting volume up.
Right.
It doesn't do anything. Now, as far as volume down, the long press option to launch the camera is nice, because you can just, you know where the bottom of the buttons are, mm-hmm. right? You can just kind of swipe up and you can feel where it is. It's finding that power button in the middle that's the wonky one, because you're trying to, you know, feel around, and you know, you just kind of feel silly when, you know, every other phone you can pick it up and you know exactly where the power button's at.
Yep. So with the buttons on the back probably enable the smaller bezels,
right,
and can pack the 5.5-inch screen in. What did we determine the size, the overall size of the G2 is just about exactly the same size as the HTC One, isn't it?
It's a touch wider, but it's no taller, I don't think. I mean, if you bear with me, I could go grab a whole bunch of devices to compare. Well, but I think it's just a touch wider, which, you know, width hurts your usability quite a bit.
That
causes the reach with your thumb over the device. But height-wise, you know, it wasn't an issue for me height-wise as much as just, you know, sheer size. I think the dimensions are probably about very similar to what the Galaxy S4 is.
Probably. So to you, is it worth LG investigating keeping the buttons on the back for the what would it be, the G22 or the G2 squared or whatever name they'll come up with for it. Should they keep it and keep those tiny bezels? Because I really think if you move the buttons back on the side, your bezels are going to grow.
Yeah, it's hard to say how much of the trade-off was made. You know, we've seen some phones with some small bezels, and it's all about how things are laid out on the inside. But I can applaud LG for thinking outside of the box and, you know, going with this on a phone. You know, we've seen a couple tablets with power buttons on the back and things like that. But I can give LG a little bit of a pass for trying something new and marketing it, and you know, you see the commercials, you know, all about the rear key or whatever it's called. I don't think it's maybe worth the trade-off for everybody. And when you have a mass market device, maybe that's best left to something, you know, try it on a different kind of device first, and then when it works out well, maybe bring it up market a little bit. You know, who knows how many lost sales there are going to be because of the keys, or how many gained sales there are because of the big, the tiny bezel with the big screen. But I think if they could have brought in the bezels, you know, a millimeter more or something, and put buttons, you know, where they, you know, belong, air quotes, I think that they probably would have been a net positive for them to do that.
But I will say, this is the only 5-inch plus screen phone that I could stand to use. And that's
right.
Because
and
the bezels are so
small. And it's well over 5, right? It's not 5 like the Galaxy S4.
Yep. So, you know, I think they did a good job. You know, the way they built it and designed it, I could do without the buttons on the back, but I understand why they're there. And I don't know. I kind of like that they did it. Hope they make another one and fix the few things that they didn't. So enough of that. There are very few software differences between our two versions.
Right.
And yes, the T-Mobile one is out. We haven't had a chance to grab it yet. And of course, when Sprint comes out, you know, we're going to look at them. And if there's anything seriously different, we'll talk about it. From what I can see, the T-Mobile one seems very, very similar to the AT&T one. Sprint looks very similar to the AT&T one. We'll have to see when it comes out. But the UI, I think, didn't we determine that the UI is just about exactly the same, but the defaults are chosen differently?
Yeah, and it seems like there's a couple. It seems like for once, the Verizon one has less stuff on it than the AT&T one. The Verizon, the settings are just in a scrolling list view instead of a tab view on AT&T. AT&T has the persistent media volume controls and the notification bar. Verizon's don't have those. They only show up when you're playing media. AT&T has the carrier branding and the notification bar. They like to do that. Are there any more big differences? I think some of the buttons are styled differently, but I think it's about 98% the same.
Yeah, if you use one, you'll be very comfortable using the other. And if you didn't flip it over and look on the back, you would probably never know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, other than the way they crammed Verizon up at the top.
Yes, in the top left, top right corner.
Verizon, we're going to give you hell about that forever as long as you keep doing it, because you've got all this space in the back you could have. Wouldn't it a big multicolor Verizon logo with a red Z looked good?
That's the thing.
There.
The thing is, they did it on the back too, but not nearly as big as they usually do.
We got a bunch of questions people have emailed and people are asking them here. Greg, he wants to know: is there any way to clean up all the options in that notification shade? Since we're talking about it, Andrew, you wanna see if you can't pop it up next to the camera and show them what we can do without Root?
Yeah, so let's see. So by default, at least in the Verizon version, you're going to be looking at quite a bit of stuff. You have your settings, your Q-Slide apps, and Verizon likes to bug you about the Wi-Fi. So what you need to do is you're going to have to go into those quick settings up at the top, and it's kind of annoying. They hide it, but you're going to have to go to Edit, and turn on the option to turn off Q-Slide apps. So Let's see if I can find it. So once you turn that on, then you can turn off QSlide and get rid of the Wi-Fi, and then all of a sudden you have, you know, pretty much what every other manufacturer has been doing for the last 3-5 years is you just get regular quick toggles. And as far as I know, you can't get rid of the quick toggles completely. You can turn them down so that there's only 4 or 5 of them, but at least on the Verizon version, you can clean it up all the way to just have the quick settings. Now, I'm not sure if that's the same case on AT&T or not.
No, on AT&T, there's another one of those tiny differences. This is stock. This is Jerry just factory reset the phone. Mm-hmm. This is how it's laid out. You can see QSlide. Oh, focus. Anyway, the very first one by my finger that's wiggling here is QSlide, that's Quick Memo. Beside it is QSlide. If I tap it, I can turn those QSlide apps off, but my brightness and my volume, it stays. There's no way to get rid of it. The same thing as you said with the edit. You slide over. If you uncheck all of them, let me do that real quick, because intuitively I would think, well, let's uncheck all of these, and I'll get rid of all those toggles. But it doesn't quite work that way. If you uncheck them all, you just get one big button that says edit, so you can bring them all back.
And the same is the case with QSlide, unless you turn it off completely.
So, can you get rid of all the options? No. You can get rid of the worst offender. I'm going to use that word, offender. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think it's offender, yeah.
It's, if you're going to use QSlide, I guess it really makes sense to put the quick shortcuts somewhere easy. But, man, you start getting, especially if you install an app that adds a persistent notification, you don't have any room to see your own. So it's nice that you can take that out. I wish AT&T would do like Verizon and only show you the volume slider when you're actually using something that makes noise.
Right, and when you do change the volume, you can always tap that settings gear next to the volume pop-up and change all the volumes anyways. Yep. So it's kind of annoying to have it persistent like that. You know, you can easily have half of your notification shade full with persistent stuff.
Yep. But that's part of their UI. That's
right.
So we'll mark that one as answered. I hope we answered it okay for you, Greg. And I want to move down to Roberts because he's talking about the UI too. Why don't you go ahead and read that one, Andrew?
Let's see. Mine hasn't quite popped up for me yet.
Let me smack the side of this.
Maybe that's my problem.
I'll go ahead and read it and you can think on how to answer it.
Yeah.
Okay, Robert asked, the LG UI and LG in general gets called a poor man's TouchWiz. From what I've seen, the LG UI seems to have a more consistent theme and workflow. After using the devices, how does it compare in terms of usability?
I think that's... I haven't heard it characterized like that as much as I've heard it just characterized as people say that LG likes to copy Samsung because Samsung might have gotten their branding around TouchWiz, you know, sooner. But the way I put it in my review was that LG is doing something a lot more grown-up feeling than what Samsung's doing. I don't think that Samsung, you know, I think Samsung has one of the more ugly kind of calamities going on in the interface, and yeah, that's kind of how it is. And while an LG has a consistent theme, like we say here, or Robert says here, I think it's more consistent. The colors are nice. It's gray, black, white, and blue, and it's like that throughout the interface. You know, you open up the camera interface, it's gray, black, white, and blue with some gradients and things. Now, they do some kind of lame stuff with some, you know, sparkly animations, and, you know, when you swipe through home screens by default, they, you know, tumble all over the place and things like that. But, you know, those are just...
Nobody's reported they're getting sick from them yet.
So. No, they're not quite that crazy. Tumbling, not, you know, zooming in and out at least. But I think that it's not just a couple steps, it's like miles ahead of what TouchWiz is doing. Even, you know, we looked at the Galaxy Note 3 today in Alex's hands-on video, and it looks the exact same as it did on the Note 2, you know, in general. But LG has been clipping along nicely and has fixed a lot of things. Now, functionally, it may still be kind of weird, and you know, it's clearly not stock. It's not as elegant, as I would say, as what you find on a Nexus or what you find on Sense 5. But it's a lot better than what we've seen before in LG and what we see currently in Samsung. So I definitely wouldn't call it the poor man's TouchWiz or anything like that. Maybe the poor man's Sense would be a little bit better way to look at it.
Now, my opinion is, I'm not going to compare it to TouchWiz, because while they on the surface they kind of look the same, I think you touched on it. They act very different. They have a very different feel when you're using it. But what I like about LG is every version, every phone they put out is tweaked a little bit different, and it gets a little bit better. They're definitely paying attention to what they think is wrong, and I expect they're getting user feedback, or they have, you know, focus groups of some sort, and they're still in that fiddling phase. We rag on Samsung, well, this looks the same as the last time. Maybe they're past that fiddling stage, and they're very happy with what they have. You know, 40, 50 million users are very happy with it. So, you know, maybe we're just putting too much nerd judgment into it here. And you know, maybe the average Joe just loves what Samsung's giving them, and that's what matters. Those are the people buying the phones. We're just here to tell you what we think of them. But in terms of usability, Robert, I'll have to echo Andrew. You can get into your flow with this, and you know, after a short adjustment period, you'll pretty much be able to do anything you want, and very easily, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. So we'll mark that one, and we'll come down here next. Vince has a question, and I'll go ahead and mark it. And since it takes too long to...
Oh, I can see Vince's question, though. Even though it hasn't popped up, I scrolled down the list and found it.
Okay, so, you see the one we're answering?
If so, go for it. I believe... Oh, he has two.
Yeah.
I believe. Anyway, so can you delete any of the pre-installed software or bloatware or just hide it? Vince asks. Now, speaking on the Verizon one, you can only not hide it. You can disable all of the apps. You'll want to keep a couple installed. You want to keep my Verizon account installed probably, and you're going to want to keep the mobile hotspot one intact if you want to use that, because that's tied into the settings. But all of they install 3, 4, 5 Amazon apps, NFL Mobile if you don't want that. They can all be disabled. I don't think I was able to delete a single one of them. What was the case on the AT&T version?
On the AT&T version, the AT&T stuff, most of it I could disable. The address book. And to me, that was the worst offender in the entire phone, except maybe Carrier IQ, which we'll talk about here in a second. But the AT&T address book, because when the first time you try to look at your contacts, it tries to preempt everything and become your default and push everything through their cloud. And that may be very helpful for some customers, but I didn't want it to do that. So I had to stop and say, whoa, I better read this. And selected no. And you couldn't disable that. Anything else? I mean, I'm not going to lie, I found a lot of the LG stuff not very useful either. But I think the contacts from AT&T is the only thing I wanted to get rid of and couldn't.
Yeah. The way that Verizon handles that is you get the stock LG contacts app, but they try to do like a backup assistant, migration assistant kind of stuff that you can easily uncheck and opt out of in the main setup. So it's not something that you have to disable or anything like that. I think I can agree that some of the LG stuff gets in the way as well. You know, you're probably, you know, you might not be one to have a notebook or... what is it, Polaris Office, you know, you can disable a lot of that stuff too, but it's not hard to clean up. I mean, you have 32 gigs of storage to work with here, so you don't have to worry about, you know, running out of storage from the 10 pre-installed apps that are a couple megs apiece.
Right. Right. So I mentioned Carrier IQ. Andrew, your phone doesn't have it, does it?
I don't believe so, no. Verizon does their own thing.
Right. And on AT&T, it's there. No, you can't shut it off. No, they didn't ask you when you... And I double-checked this. I factory reset it again. There is no mention of any type of tracking or, you know, logistics software of any sort. But it is there. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? You know what? Everybody does it. Hell, on your Nexus, Google's doing it. They need these metrics to, you know, to do stuff for the next time. Google may not be very invasive, and they do tell you that they're collecting this and they're collecting that. But Carrier IQ's got a really bad name because of that fiasco Sprint and HTC fell into when it was implemented wrong. Yeah, that's really bad. That was really bad. I'm glad they fixed it. They didn't fix it fast enough for me. It should have been, all right, everything stops. Tomorrow I want to fix. Nobody gets to go home. And then, you know, if you can't install this update yourself, drop by your local Sprint store and we'll update your phone for you today. Maybe I'm dreaming there, but that's what I'm like. But other than that, you know, Carrier IQ isn't necessarily a bad thing. It should. And in the future HTC phones, they have done very well. They tell you, you know, they are going to do this, and do you want to opt out? And they even call it Tell HTC, and there's a section in the settings. You don't have any of that on the AT&T G2. Unless you've rooted your phone, you are at its mercy. And the more I think and the more I look, I do believe that that is part of the reason why some people on AT&T are seeing weird battery drain when the screen is off. I'm one of them. I have two of them here. AT&T sent me two because there was some shipping issues. Both of them, the battery drains more than normal when the screen is shut off. And I think that that's maybe Carrier IQ looking for location and sending and serving. Maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong, but it's doing something.
Interesting.
But on that note, Verizon's already gotten an update. You guys have already gotten a software update.
Yeah, and I can check again now, but... my phone would not download the update for one reason or another. It keeps checking, and it never comes down. So I'm not sure what, and multiple factory resets and everything. And it just won't pull down the update. So we're not sure what's going on with that.
But let's hope that, you know, I don't know. I don't. It's like Phil says, I don't think AT&T ever stopped using Carrier IQ. They never said they were going to stop. But let's hope they have implemented it correctly. And now you know, you are forewarned with the knowledge that it's there before you make your purchasing decision, and that's all we can do for you.
Right.
Right. And you want to grab a question from the email list, Andrew?
Sure. Let's might as well just start at the top of the email list here. Brandon writes, like a lot of people, I'm coming from a Galaxy Nexus on Verizon. I unlocked the Galaxy Nexus first week. I had it and was on some sort of a custom ROM ever since then. Can you talk about the difference between that type of phone and the G2 in rooting and ROMs? I'm also curious why Clockwork Mod Recovery has not been put on the G2 yet. What have you got to say about this, Jerry? Because I'm not entirely sure.
There is no other phone like a Nexus phone for unlocking and modifying the software. I am sure that enough enterprising people out there have these G2s in their clutches. All that will happen. It's just not going to be instant. The Nexus, I mean, you know, you had one. If you bought it at 8 in the morning, by 4 that afternoon, there was Clockwork Mod and custom ROMs already for it. That's just the nature of the beast. The G2 is a carrier phone. It was built. AT&T is the customer, and Verizon is the customer, and Sprint, not you and I, and AT&T resells it to us. So it's not going to be wide open, and that's just something you're going to have to be patient for.
And in terms of the recovery, Last I heard, basically, there were some people that were close to having TWRP ready to go on the G2, but that was the last I've heard about it. The phone is new too. Right. I mean, it's with these kinds of, you know, bespoke carrier devices, you know, Verizon may be the only one that changed the design drastically, but they're all different devices. It's going to take time for people to figure this out.
All right, I'll grab another question from the email queue here.
Sure.
Ransom writes, hey, AC guys, sorry I won't be able to type this question in live. I've been hearing rumbling that some AT&T models are suffering from bad power drain issues, like losing 4-5% battery every hour while it's idle. I think I might be one of those sufferers. Adjusting as well as I can for individual mileage, I'm still not seeing anywhere near the good to awesome battery life all the reviewers are claiming. Have you heard anything about this on your end? Thanks a ton. That's kind of what I was just talking about. Yes, my units do that. My battery life impressions, the Snapdragon 800 is legit, guys. It's, you know, I'll admit, I used Candy Crush as my baseline to test battery life because it's not getting data from the internet. It's probably spying on you some way or another. But it's processor intensive and it runs locally. So I grabbed a couple phones, and let's see how long we can Candy Crush before we notice severe battery drain. The G2 is much better than every other phone I've got. I mean, when it's on and running, I would say it's easily 200% more power efficient, as in if you drain 40% of your battery on the Nexus 4, you're only going to drain 10% of the battery on the G2 to do the same amount. Granted, the battery is bigger, but I think they have the Snapdragon 800 is real when they say it's better on the battery, the way it processes, and the smaller die size. Having said that, if I leave my phones in my pocket, the Nexus 4 or the Moto X will last just as long or longer in my pocket through a normal day than the G2 will. And that's because the screen is off most of the time, and the Moto X and the Nexus 4 don't seem to do anything when the screen is off.
Yeah, and I had a similar experience where I wrote in my review how battery life seemed to drain pretty consistently, whether you're using the device heavily or the device is just idle and you're just checking email and, you know, popping out a message or two, you know, an hour. And I wouldn't say that it was in the range of like 4-5% an hour or anything like that. I still, you know, easily could do 24 hours of battery life on the G2. But I would say that it's doing a lot. It seems like it's doing a lot more in the background, even when the screen's off, than other devices are. Even with the Moto X doing active display, you know, and, you know, all those types of things, it doesn't seem to drain as quickly. You know, the G2 does have a big battery, and I said that if these things were happening and battery life was poor, I would be a little more worried about it. But yeah, battery life is so good that it's hard to complain. I can use the device 4, 5, 6 hours screen on in a day if I need to, yep, you know, and it doesn't matter. So, which is kind of surprising considering 1080p screen of this size. So, I mean, the fact that the battery life is good makes me not worry about it too much, but, you know, it's clear that LG is, something's going on in the background, yep, that isn't happening on the other phones.
But I think you hit it on the head that it's not as big as an issue as it could be, because it's still, you're still getting, you know, you're going to get a full day plus use out of this phone, even if you're blessed with one of the ones that has the battery drain issues more than most. So, but on the other hand, that doesn't excuse if there is a bug. If there is a bug in there, let's hope it gets fixed. It's just, it doesn't seem to be a bug that I'm familiar with that I can find. I said it may be carrier IQ. That just, I mean, it's hard to tell. It's doing something.
Right.
When it shouldn't.
And battery life is different on each carrier. And yep, for each person in each region, you know, when you have, you know, the way the towers are laid out in your area is completely different. You know, I'm in Seattle where I have amazing Verizon connection, you know, maybe not the best speeds all the time, but I have full bars every single place that I go, and you know, that just helps battery life when your phone's not hunting for service.
Okay, Scotty wants to know, and we've got an email question about this too from Richard. So if the G2 is indeed the base for the next Nexus, will this be the best Android phone yet? That's what Scotty asked in the chat. And Richard mailed in and said, should we wait for the LG-built Nexus 5 so we can compare it to the G2? And then Kevin writes, will the G2 be the next Nexus phone? A lot of people want to know about the next Nexus.
Maybe that's the reason why so many people are interested in the G2.
Yes. You know what, Andrew? I'm going to let you field this one after I am one of the few people in the world who has seen the Verizon Nexus 1. I have seen and touched the Verizon Nexus 1. After having seen that and what happened, I have no idea. Maybe there won't even be a Nexus 5. I don't even have dreams or hopes anymore.
Yeah, having not ever seen the Verizon Nexus 1, and most people are saying, what, Verizon Nexus 1? But the next Nexus phone, Nexus 5, whatever you want to call it, maybe based on the G2, and that it, if you were to take off all of the plastic and the screen and everything down to the board and the battery and built a new phone around it, it may be the next Nexus phone. That doesn't necessarily mean, you know, we've spent the last half hour talking about all the things that LG and the carriers have done to this phone to change it for better or worse. The phone is going to be different, even if it is the same phone as the G2. So, you know, if the things that we've seen, these pictures and things like that turn out to be the next Nexus phone, it clearly does not look like the G2. The camera's in a different place, it's a different size, it's all of these things. You know, does a phone that has the same processor and is made by the same manufacturer the same phone? LG makes lots of phones, and there are lots of phones out there with Snapdragon 800s and 3,000 milliamp hour batteries and 1080p screens. You know, that doesn't mean they're the same phone. So I don't think that you can look at the performance of the G2 and, you know, just instinctively know that the next Nexus is going to be an amazing device just based on that. It's really depends on what Google does and contracts out LG or whomever else to do for them and pull that all together, you know. Yep. The hardware doesn't make the phone. The software doesn't make the phone. It's got to be the whole package for it to be, you know, something that's that great. And, you know, I'm sure we'll get into the camera here in a little while, and, mm-hmm. you know, that's going to be a big differentiator too. You know, the LG G2 camera prowess isn't necessarily going to translate over to a next Nexus phone unless they do some serious stuff.
So we'll go ahead and that's a great segue. Talk about the camera, Andrew. You are, I'm not going to lie, you're a damn good photographer with a phone or with a camera. I think anybody that's seen your pictures will have to agree. So tell us about the camera. Tell us what you like.
I think that, you know, not having used the Lumia 1020 and not having used the Xperia Z1, which Alex has his hands on right now from Sony, I think that this is the best Android camera out there, the best camera phone in general out there. I've spent a lot of time with iPhones. This is way above that. I've spent a lot of time with the One, with the Xperia ZZL, which has a great camera, another 13 megapixel camera, the Note 2, the S3, the S4. This is just on another level. And so, you know, we're looking at 13 megapixels, but we're also looking at OIS, image stabilization, which was the big deal for the HTC One. But the trade-off there was you got 4 megapixels, and they do a lot of crazy stuff to, you know, over-process the images to try to make things look right. The G2 doesn't have to do that. And LG hasn't done that, whether it's necessary or not. So you're taking amazing pictures during the day, whether it's in intelligent auto mode, which I think you talked about in your review, which is really important. Pull out the phone, intelligent auto, snap, and it's good. Or HDR gets drastically better when you have OIS to work with, because when you take three pictures, you know, the shake in your hand gets reduced because the OIS keeps things nice and stable. So I found that it took amazing pictures, comparable to the one in low light. I wouldn't say that it's better in extremely low light. I think, Jerry, you and I talked about this a little bit. You know, in those situations where it's pitch black outside, the one will take a picture that you can see, and no other phone is going to take a picture that you can see. But anything higher than that, if you're taking pictures of sunset, you know, at, you know, 7, 8, 9 o'clock at night during the summer, and, you know, there's just a little bit of light out, the G2 is not going to have grain. It's not going to be shaky or blurry or over-processed. You know, it was really hard to take a picture that I did not like with this phone.
I think what impressed me the most is I have always said that if you want to take pictures and post them on the web, your camera on your smartphone is probably fine. But if you want to take and put them on a flash drive and carry them down to Walgreens and have prints ordered, that you're better off to just use a camera. I think I have seen a few pictures I've taken with the G2 that, now I wouldn't get posters made or 8x10s or anything, but I would get a, you know, a desk-sized picture I would not be afraid to have printed. The detail is there, and that impressed me, and I love it when I have to go back and I'm wrong, especially, you know, because this is a good thing. I want it to get better, and it did. I had just gotten to the point where I swore off smartphone cameras forever, and then along comes this. So good for them.
Yeah, and we kind of had the same feelings, well, at least I know I did, when the HTC One came out. Everybody said, This is the next level, and they're doing some crazy stuff here, software and hardware wise, that's like blowing other things out of the water. And I felt the same way with the Xperia ZL. Not a lot of people had that phone in the US, but I felt, you know, Sony is doing some crazy stuff with the sensor, with the software, and, you know, this is just, you know, I go back through my camera samples from all these different reviews, and I like to compare them. You know, am I just getting sucked into the fact that I'm taking a lot of good pictures with this phone, or are they really that much better? And I compare them to old phones and older, you know, I talk about old phones that are 4 or 5 months old, but old phones, and it's just, it's not even on the same level. The G2 is just far and away better.
Real quick, Vince wants to know, is it above the iPhone 5S camera? Have you had a chance to play with the 5S yet, Andrew?
I have not yet, and it sounds like not a lot of people have either. It's kind of hard to find one right nowadays.
But I've played with the 5. You know, I know mm-hmm. that's a year old, and I would have to say that the way I take pictures, I get better results with the G2 than I did with the 5. That's probably because of the image stabilization.
I think that we're going to have to, somebody's going to have to get their hands on a 5S here eventually and do a bit of a camera shootout, but I think that it's far, far away better than what the five is doing.
We'll have Phil and Renee will be down in Miami together for their editor-in-chief war summit meeting thing. I will make somebody tie them to a chair and they can do some comparisons. But okay, let me go back to another question here, because I want to try to get all these answers.
Sure.
Carol wants to know, can you touch on the wireless storage feature? Do you think it helps the fact that there is no SD card? The wireless storage feature, it's kind of cool. I hate to call it a bug. The instructions on the screen that LG gives you don't seem to work. It's what's called a Samba share, and if you use a Windows computer, you can find the phone right in your Windows Explorer. If you use a Mac or a Linux, you can find it by its share name. But LG makes you believe that you should be able to type that into a web address. And that can be done if you mount these files, these folders a certain way, and I don't think they are mounted that way. So unless you play around with it, it doesn't work through Chrome or Firefox. So that out of the way, did you ever, you know, did you play much with the wireless storage feature, Andrew?
No, I didn't, because I never ran out of storage. I wasn't moving big files back and forth. I mean, for me, wireless storage is my laptop's on my home Wi-Fi, my phone's on home Wi-Fi, and I upload everything to Dropbox, and then it's on the other one faster than I can find a cable or go turn on the wireless share feature or anything like that. Yeah,
so you have a workflow that works for you that it wasn't necessary.
Right.
I used it because my workflow is I use an app. It's called a Wi-Fi. Goodness gracious, it's one of Wi-Fi Explorer Pro. I use that app all the time because I never seem to have a cable. And I don't want to fool with Dropbox, so I use an app. And the wireless storage feature is very much like that app is. It's, you know, it's just a folder that mounts, and you look through it just like any other folder on your computer. How, does that help? There's no SD card? No, because it's still, I mean, these are full files that are on your phone. It's not going to give you any more space. It just makes it easier to get to the files from your computer.
All right. It may be easier than an SD card in the way of moving files back and forth, sure.
Yeah.
But it's not ever a replacement for that. Now, that being said, you have 32 gigs of storage, right, at least.
I had no instance where I said, oh, man, I wish there was more gigs on this phone.
No.
So I hope that answers your question, Carol. It's really two different things, but I think if you get a G2 and you use Windows and you want to figure out why the wireless storage isn't working, turn it on, set your phone down, and then click the Windows Explorer and look in your network places and you'll find it. It's there.
Right.
So a quick fire from the emails. Andrew, Joe C. wants to know, do you find that Knock Knock is inconsistent?
Yes.
Yep.
That doesn't get much more quickfire than that. It's not 100% consistent. And, you know, some people were saying, oh, it's more of a tap-tap than a knock-knock, or sometimes I tap three times to guarantee that it gets it. And
yep, my answer is it should be called knock-knock, knock-knock, because if you bang four times, every time it works.
Yeah.
But, yes, I found it inconsistent, too. Vince, in the chat, so did you run? Have you ever either one of us run a launcher replacement like Nova over it? If so, how does it work? Did you try that, Andrew?
No, I actually, after turning a lot of the animations and stuff off, I was happy with the stock launcher, and I liked the fact that it is a wide phone, but you still got five icons high and five wide. So it actually, I thought that was just fine. I didn't put a third party launcher on it.
I knew that's what you would say. That's why I asked you that way. Because that's the same thing I did. Yes, I did try Nova Pro, and what other one did I try? I tried a couple, Action Launcher. And they all run fine. They run just like they would on any other phone. There's no weirdness like, you know, Blink Feed to deal with. They just work exactly as you would expect. But the launcher itself, you can shut everything off, and it acts very much like the stock, with air quotes, Android launcher. I mean, I thought it was fine, and I like the options it gives you in the app drawer.
Mm-hmm.
So I was good with that. Where are we at in the email?
We are at Joe C. Rick writes, How is the LG G2 radio compared to the quote-unquote legendary Motorola radios? I go through a lot of the Pacific Northwest fringe areas. Hey, maybe I can help with this. And my Samsung Galaxy Nexus radio is maddeningly weak. And then secondly, yes, well, let's talk about that point first. The other point's about AT&T. I would definitely say that the Motorola radios are, I guess, legendary. Motorola and Verizon on CDMA and LTE radios is kind of like the match made in heaven.
Yep.
I I just had the Motorola Droid Ultra on Verizon in, and I had the HTC One on Verizon in, and the Kyocera Hydro Elite on Verizon, and the G2. So I've had 5 Verizon phones in the last couple weeks. I don't think the G2 performs any worse than any other of the phones. I would say that the Ultra definitely held on to an LTE signal the best. It, you know, around the fringe areas, going down south of Seattle through all the suburbs and things like that, you do drop LTE, but I think the Droid Ultra held on to it the best. The One and the G2 did completely fine. I didn't have any issues with them either. I have greater issues just with the Verizon LTE network in general around Seattle. It's just not very fast as it used to be. But as far as call quality, holding on to a signal, you know, I never dropped a signal, dropped a call, anything like that. So I wouldn't say that the G2 is particularly bad. I think that the Galaxy Nexus on Verizon is probably one of the worst examples of radios on Verizon lately, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, last generation technology there.
Right. I think that these are these phones are way ahead of it. The One, the G2, of course, the Droid Ultra and Moto X. So I don't think you'll have any issues using the G2 on Verizon. But at least I didn't notice.
Yeah, the Galaxy Nexus, I used to, you know, I hate to say that I laughed at people because I didn't laugh. It's horrible. All the stories about how poor the radios were on Verizon and Sprint. Because you had a Galaxy Nexus, a GSM version.
Yes.
It was okay. There was no real glaringly issues. Then I tried one on Sprint, and boy, they're there. That phone had some radio issues. You know, the one I used was really in line with all the complaints you read. So, you know, I'm glad that the G2 is nothing like that.
All right, so let's go on to the second part of his question where he talks about AT&T here. Yes, I know that Europe runs on GSM, as does AT&T, but not Verizon. If I want to take my phone to Europe and, quote-unquote, rent a SIM card over there, do I just change to AT&T and be done with it? Do both the LG G2 and Moto X offer the same Europe SIM compatibility? Are both of them SIM unlocked or otherwise unlocked out of the box? So I can speak to Verizon's. It is unlocked. I put an AT&T and a T-Mobile SIM in it and got HSPA plus speeds. I think it's HSPA plus 21. It might be 42, actually, without any finicky weirdness. I just had to change the APNs.
Golf clap, Verizon. Well done.
Right. So, and the SIM card comes out without a tool. It just needs a fingernail, which is nice. So you can take this Verizon phone over to Europe. It doesn't have the LTE bands you're going to want. It only has Verizon's LTE bands as far as we know. They only had to test it for Verizon's LTE because that's the only thing it's going to be used on. If I didn't get T-Mobile or AT&T LTE, that means you're probably not going to get it over in Europe either, but you will get HSPA Plus and GSM. It's quad band HSPA, quad band GSM. You'll have no problems on that front.
The AT&T version is SIM-locked to AT&T. Mm. So it doesn't work with my T-Mobile SIM.
Which AT&T may or may not unlock it for you, but usually if you're nice and you ask, tell them you're going to go travel, they'll Correct. Unlock it for you.
But, you know, out of the box, it's not. And that's – I learned another reviewer and blogger just – had a heck of a time by saying the wrong thing about networks on a phone. So I only say what the box says.
Yeah, and that's why we have to be, we're not entirely sure. Jerry and I did a bit of digging on the LTE bands on the Verizon version, and all we know is that it runs on Verizon's LTE. It's not really published anywhere else that we can find officially that says it has anything more. And all I can test is putting an AT&T and a T-Mobile SIM in it, and they're working. So,
okay. Another quick one. Jason in the chat says, I've had this phone about a week. One thing that bothers me is the dot grid over the screen. Lots of devices have these dots, but these seem very pronounced, especially in bright lighting. Is it just me? No, I see them too, Jason.
I see them too, and in bright light, it's very annoying. But yes. I think you probably know why.
Why is that? Because I'm not sure.
I think that it's... I don't see it on many other phones. I see it... well, maybe it's just coincidental. I see it mostly on the G2 and on my Nexus 4.
Oh,
I'm not
so
sure if it's an
LED screen thing.
I'm wondering if it's an LG LCD thing.
Well, it could be.
I don't notice it on the 1.
Okay. I noticed it especially... I took a picture at just the right angle, and boy, they like jump out at you. So I got to look. I don't let it bother me. I mean, Jason, it's they're there. Don't let that ruin the phone for you.
The screen is so nice otherwise.
Yes, I get OCD sometimes too, but pretend like they're not there and just stop looking. That's the only thing I can suggest. Real quick from the email, Jonathan writes, I own a G2 and love it. I usually buy a case with my phone. I like something thin but protective, but I found almost nothing. The only decent case was that smart case, and it seems useless to me because it's not very protective. What other cases are out there that are thin and reliable? You got to remember how this phone is new, and maybe this because of where I and who I work for. When they make a phone cases, they have prototyped these like 4 or 5 months ago. Because there's buttons on the back of this phone, they couldn't just take the outside dimensions and build their case. It's probably, I'm sure they're coming. I imagine if you get on Amazon, the selection grows every day. And I know Joel, who, you know, for shopandroid.com, he's on top of it. We're going to get some in. They're coming, but maybe they're slow because of those back buttons.
Yeah, and I'll be curious to see how those buttons work out with the case, as far as, especially on the Verizon version, with how flat they are, you know, reaching past a case to check those out.
A couple more questions here because we want to wrap this up, but I do want to get everybody's questions answered. Carol, again, the sound, does it have to be a certain bitrate MP3 for it to sound better? First off, Andrew, did you notice that big deal of a sound like LG?
Yeah, LG made a big deal about it. Having a special amp and things like that. I didn't, you know, I'm about as far as you can get from an audiophile. I listen to a lot of podcasts and a lot of streaming music that's not super high quality. It sounded fine to me. It didn't sound bad. Some other phones will kind of overdo it. Some of the phones that have like Dolby built in or something will try too hard to give you an immersive experience. I at least noticed that everything sounded natural and sounded good through my headphones.
Right. I'm not going to say it sounded bad by any means because it... And I've used phones that sound bad. I'm sure you have too.
Mm-hmm.
But I expected... Remember those old Maxell commercials where the guy leans back in his chair and all this stuff? I expected that and it didn't happen. But it sounds good overall. So, mm-hmm. You know, that's not a big issue. Mark that one out.
I see. What about Vince's next top question here? Because I think we both have both devices. Vince, yep. Is asking here, LG G2 versus Moto X, which has the best user experience in general? Now, you've been using the Moto X for a while. I've got one in for like the last week or so, but I haven't been using it a ton because I've been on the G2. But the user experience overall, I think the Moto X has it just based on size and what software I'm used to. I think those are the two big points for me.
Agreed. The Moto X, the size does it for me, and the notifications, I love being able to just press my finger to the screen and read the first three lines of my email. That, to me, is more important than any other feature in any other phone. So maybe I'm the wrong guy to ask, but the Moto X does it for me. Having said that, there are no showstoppers that I ran into on the G2. There's absolutely nothing I can say I didn't like. If you go out and buy one, I think you're going to be very, very happy, and you're going to have a future-proof phone that for at least a year is going to be able to do everything you can find in Google Play and ask it to do. So there's that.
All right, let me snag the last email I believe that we have listed okay. here. Tom writes, I have an issue with the proximity sensor on my Verizon version. The phone shuts off right after waking up if anything is too close to the proximity sensor. This includes a clear plastic dry bag or a Ziploc bag. I have to keep phones in bags because I'm on the water a lot. I haven't noticed this, actually. Even when, you know, I reach up towards the top of the phone often, right after turning it on to swipe down the notification bar with the knock-knock, and I haven't noticed that. I'm wondering if you have an overactive proximity sensor. And I'm wondering if you have something interacting with the way that their view cover works. To turn on and off just a portion of the screen when it closes. I'm wondering if that's something that's happening, because I don't know why else the proximity sensor would be interacting with the screen turning on and off.
But with that right there, that's an issue. This is the first I've heard of it. Having said that, maybe there's 1,000 people complaining and I just haven't seen it.
Yeah, but, see, I'm messing with it right now and I can force it to turn back off, actually. I don't think I could maybe do this on camera, but screen on, and you can... Oh, see, sometimes it doesn't work. You cover up the proximity sensor as soon as the screen comes on, and it'll turn off. I think it's that view cover coming into play. Yeah. So I don't know. It's kind of hard to do, but...
And then John has thrown up in the chat... Do you know when Sprint will carry this phone? John, it goes up for pre-order, I think, next week. Don't hold me to that date, but you can search Sprint G2 pre-order at Android Central, because I'm sure we covered it when Sprint announced it. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that they have announced a official date when it will be sold other than before the holiday season. Now,
I see pre-order October 11th.
I have a person that I speak with on occasion that works with Sprint and for this sort of thing. He has told me last week in October. Look for it then. You know, don't hold me to that. That's a rumor that I'm not even confident enough to write on Android Central, because it's one guy saying what he's heard. But, you know, I wouldn't expect it before then, or somebody would have tipped us or any of the other Android blogs. When they get news that good, you can't keep it to yourself. So look for it, you know, not any sooner than the end of the month.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom has kicked in. It's not the view cover. He doesn't have one. Tom is...
I can seemingly reproduce it. I never had it happen in my regular usage, but... I don't know why else the proximity sensor would be involved.
See, I cannot make the AT&T one do it. And that, I would think that all that hardware should be identical. So I'm not sure. You know what, I would say that's one of the cases where you're going to have to pay attention in forums. Our forums, XDA forums. Over at Fandroid, they've got good forums. Pay attention in all of them, because it's one of those things like the weird touch issues with the Nexus 7. First, you have to find out why and how it's happening, and then the ball get rolling and see if a fix can be done. But you need to make sure you give your input and listen to the input of others, because, yeah, Andrew showed me that shouldn't be designed to work that way, so... It's something that will have to be crowdsourced, I think.
Yeah, that's not right at all.
I know there's more questions coming in. Guys, we're glad, you know, we're glad that you care as much about this phone, because we care about it too. I was excited to get this one. But we've got to cut it off here. We can't go too long. So, Andrew, take us home, baby. I've always wanted to say that.
Alrighty, well, a little bit different than our average podcast, but we are still brought to you by Shop Android, and you can always find all of their stuff. Like Jerry said, we're working on the cases and everything. I know that we're trying to figure it out, but we're going to have the cases coming in, all the accessories and everything at shopandroid.com. If you want to get a hold of us for the regular podcast that we do on Fridays, you can email podcast@androidcentral.com. If you want to find Jerry and I just on Google Plus, you can ask us a couple other questions about the G2 or any other phones that we have in. You can circle us, just search our names. We don't have our fancy URLs, I don't believe. Quite yet, like Phil does, unfortunately. And you can find us on our regular time, will be Fridays around 1 o'clock Pacific, 3 o'clock for Phil, 4 o'clock for you, yep. And some ungodly hour for Alex. I think we're going to try to do a podcast tomorrow.
It's tea time for Alex because it's always tea time.
Exactly. So I think you can find us tomorrow. I think we'll be doing another podcast, mainly featuring the Galaxy Note 3, I believe.
Note 3, it's happening, it's happening.
Exactly. But that will wrap it up for the LG G2 Special Edition podcast. And be sure to let us know in the comments on the post when it goes up what you thought about doing a standalone kind of Q&A episode about one device. You know, when it's a big device like this, we're thinking we might want to do this more often.
Yep. I had fun, Andrew.
Did you have fun? Yep. Yeah, I had fun as well. It's good to dive in a little deeper on some of the questions you don't always get to answer.
So we'll talk to you later, guys. Bye.
Later.